Back with you on The Takeaway, I'm Amy Walter, and we continue our look at what matters to voters in the suburbs.
Micah Roberts, Jeffersonville, Indiana. The issues that matter to me this November are health care for all, taxes, wealth inequality, and environmental issues, and that's what I'll be looking for when I'm choosing a candidate.
This is Kara in Hawthorne, New Jersey. I'm most concerned with upholding democracy, equality for minorities, immigrants, and women, repairing our international relations, gun control, and de-escalating the police.
Hi, this is Julia from Clayton, California. Oh, geez, I'm going to vote for anything that has to do with higher salaries and wages and lower taxes.
This is Seth Malloy of Justin, Texas. I will be basing my decisions on political morality. Can their goals match reality? Are they based on fact or are they fictional?
So my other job is at the Cook Political Report, and my colleague there analyzes all of the House races in the country. And what he found is of the 34 Republican districts he ranks as the most vulnerable to flipping Democratic, two-thirds are in the suburbs surrounding cities like Minneapolis, Dallas, Seattle, and Chicago. And of course, New Jersey's 7th district, which is outside of New York City. So what do these suburban districts have in common?
Obviously close to a metropolitan area. They are comprised of highly educated voters. This cycle, the ones that are most energized in these suburban districts are college-educated women voters.
That's Liesl Hickey. Liesl's the founding director of Ascent Media and a former executive director of the National Republican Congressional Committee. And what do these suburban voters look for in a candidate for Congress?
People who are thoughtful, they're mostly bipartisan or have acted in a bipartisan way while in office, that they are willing to go against the grain and sometimes go against their own party, that they're very independent. And when you look at typical base voters on either side in these districts, they're a little softer than you would see in other districts across the country that are more partisan. These voters are less partisan behaving, in my opinion.
Liesl hosts the House Talk podcast alongside Allie Lapp, the founder of the House Majority PAC and a former campaign director at the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee. Allie knows just how crucial the suburbs are for Democrats this November.
Democrats have to do exceptionally well in the suburbs in order to pick up the 23 seats they need to win the majority, for sure. I think Democrats will also pick up some non-suburban seats, some more rural, small-town seats as well. But I certainly think the majority of the seats Democrats will take back will be in the suburbs.
You guys have been doing House races for, I don't know, a million years, maybe.
It feels like
a billion years that we've been following these races. Allie, tell me what feels different when you're looking at these districts today than 2 years ago, 4 years ago.
Suburban voters, in my mind, are trending more Democratic today than they were 2 or 4 years ago.
Is this all about Trump or is there something else going on?
I think it is a lot about Trump. Let me give you an anecdote. We've been talking to some voters in Southern California, and we asked them, what percentage of the time do you think your Republican congressman votes with Donald Trump? And what do you think that percentage should be? And really interestingly, they thought that their member of Congress voted with Trump in the 60s, 60 to 70%. And they wanted him to be voting with Trump. They knew that it was a Republican, so they expected them to be voting with Trump about 50% of the time. The real number was about 97, 98, 99% for these Republican incumbents. And they were really horrified by that. Like, so they think that Congress should be much more independent of the president than it is. And I think they're really turned off by Donald Trump. And so now more than ever, they think their members of Congress should be standing up to him and they don't see it happening.
So, Liesl, how do you do that? You work with Republicans. You've worked with a lot of Republicans in districts like this where they have shown their independence and they were able to hold on to seats during, the George W. Bush era. But it seems now that showing your independence from Trump is more politically dangerous for Republicans than it was before, or that the idea of sticking with your party and with your tribe is more valuable today to voters than it was 4 or 5 years ago?
Well, I mean, this is always a calculation that people make when they're running. And in these true swing suburban districts, I make the calculation that you take a risk of offending some people who might be with your base, because the largest swath of the electorate and how you actually get a victory in November is to win a bunch of people who currently do not like the president and maybe some of his policies. I agree with Ali that that's the difference in terms of how voters feel and how they see this cycle is mostly based upon their feelings towards the president. Obviously, his approval number in suburban districts is lower than it is in other places in the country. But the thing that remains the same in suburban districts, and I think has consistently, and why Republicans can even hold on in hard times, is because at the heart of it, these voters are also very much economic voters. And in these districts, if you win economic voters, people who say the economy is what's most important to them, that is a path to victory. And that will be the path to victory for many Republicans this cycle. And the economy is performing very well. And people in these suburban districts, I think, feel like their lives are better financially.
I agree that for the suburban voters in particular, everything is seen through a prism of Donald Trump, for sure. But I don't accept the argument that if voters are just voting on economic issues, Republicans are going to win. Because in the research we've done and in talking to some of these suburban voters, they're not happy with the direction Republicans want to go on health care, and they are very split on the tax cut. And there is a real argument to make with these voters on fiscal responsibility that I think a lot of the Democrats that are running in this district are going to do. So I don't accept that if all voters care about is the economy, and if that's their top issue heading into the voting booth in November, that they automatically pull the lever for a Republican. I think Democrats have a really good case to make on economic issues as well. These are also highly educated, pretty nuanced voters, and we do find that they're very split on who to give credit for the economy to. They know that, you know, Donald Trump only took office a little more than a year ago. So they're like, well, Obama deserves some credit too. But it's also, this is just the fiscal cycle. This is how things go. Like, they're not willing to just say, yes, Republicans are always better for the economy.
Lisa, what are you saying to Republican candidates who are in these suburban districts that's different from what you were telling them in 06 or 10 or 12 or 14? Or is it still the same message?
I mean, a lot of it's the same. I think part of the difference this cycle is in 06, voters had a real problem with a lot of the policies of President Bush, and mostly that was around the Iraq War, obviously. And this cycle, most of the problems center around the president himself, how they see his character and the way he behaves, and not as much around the actual policies.
And that's what's interesting, Ali, because I agree with Liesl's point that it seems to be so much more personality focused than policy focused. And yet when I meet Democratic candidates and I watch Democratic ads, they don't talk about Donald Trump. They don't talk about his personality. They talk about health care or the tax bill or some other issue. So how much of the race is going to be determined by personality versus the issues?
Well, Democrats don't need to talk about Donald Trump's personality because, as I like to say, the Trump circus is happening. It is happening around us every day and everyone knows it. And I think that there are plenty of Donald Trump's policies that are pretty unpopular, from pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord to the tariffs, I think have some real potential for some opposition. Even, you know, their crown jewel, the tax cut, is very mixed. I mean, it's pretty split evenly. Healthcare is a problem for them. Bush had Katrina. Donald Trump has Puerto Rico. You know, there's a lot of corruption issues and misuse of taxpayer dollars that I think are problems for people in the suburbs. So I think Democrats are running on a policy agenda. And I think, again, the personality of Donald Trump is the backdrop for everything. But they know that that has only opened the door for a Democrat to walk through. And they need to prove themselves in order to walk through that door and actually get elected.
Liesl, if this were President Jeb Bush or President Mitt Romney right now, right, would we be talking about the suburban vote as being so critical in this election that these would be real swing districts?
Well, I mean, I think we'd still be talking about it. I don't know if we'd be seeing the enthusiasm that we're seeing, not just amongst traditional Democratic voters in these districts, but amongst college-educated women who have really either been independents, or a lot of them in these suburban districts have been soft Republicans or establishment Republicans or whatever sort of, you know, definition you want to give them. So I think if we would have had it maybe a different president, we wouldn't have the situation that we are currently in with those voters.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's 25 districts that Republicans hold that Hillary Clinton won. Most of those are in the suburbs. If I just look at a list of those right now, I would say, you know, maybe there's five or six that if it were Romney or Jeb Bush, Hillary wouldn't have won. You know, particularly Orange County, Texas suburbs, maybe some of those. And then you go look at the list of districts that Obama won, that that Trump won, and there's probably some of those Hillary might have carried against a less populist Republican, right? So maybe some of those would have shifted grounds. But I do think the suburbs have been the battleground for a long time and will continue to be. And you asked earlier, Amy, is it just Donald Trump that's driving them to be more Democratic, in my view? And I think that's part of it. But I do think that there are some other issues at play as well. I think that there's an increasing split in college-educated voters and non-college-educated voters. And college-educated are becoming more and more Democratic, and they tend to be in some of these higher-income suburbs. I think there's also issues like guns and immigration and sort of tolerance and diversity, where some of these voters just don't see Republicans aligning with them anymore, and so they're open to voting for a moderate, but a Democrat nonetheless.
So do you think then that it's fair to say that cultural rather than economic issues are the driving force in these districts?
I still think economic issues are the driving force. And culturally, I think where the debate used to be in these suburban districts has shifted a lot. And I think the debate now is more focused around immigration and issues around tolerance and those types of character integrity type issues, and less so about the traditional issues we used to talk about,
like
abortion, gay marriage, things like that. We've sort of moved on from those debates in these districts. So the issue set is different. I mean, I would add the environment and climate change in there as well.
I totally agree. We've seen in some of our research that protecting national parks and the environment was like the number one issue that these voters wanted their Republican congressman to stand up to Trump on. I never would have predicted that.
Right.
I thought that was really interesting.
It also seems, Allie, that the issue of guns, something that Democrats have really shied away from in the past, making a top tier issue. The fear was that there are more engaged pro-Second Amendment people than there are really passionate, you know, gun control voters, that that's changed, that we may see, I don't know, I'm curious your take, that the issue of guns and gun safety becomes a top issue in these districts in a way we haven't seen before.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out in the general. I mean, definitely Democrats have been talking about it in some primaries to sort of differentiate themselves against their opponents.
One put mace in his face to talk about it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Who is this?
There was a candidate for Congress in a Colorado congressional district in a Democratic primary who, to make a case on guns, actually sprayed mace in his own face, trying to make the point that mace was a safer way to protect schools than guns. So
it looked very painful.
Very painful way to make a point, right?
He lost.
Yes, he did. He did lose. But I think on a lot of these cultural issues like guns, like immigration, like abortion in the suburbs, I always say the candidate that brings up the issue and that's screaming the loudest about them often turns those voters off. They're looking for moderation on these issues more than anything. And I think that, you know, in the past, Republicans have been able to kind of paint Democrats as, you know, wanting to take everyone's gun away and licensing and things that just sounded so extreme. And I think that for a lot of these suburban voters, they now think Republicans are too extreme on guns, that they're not open to common sense safety precautions and measures. And I think that definitely benefits Democrats in these districts.
And not all the suburban, obviously, districts are the same. And culturally, they are different because they're in different parts of the country. So you might have ones in certain parts of the country where guns are, you know, seen very differently than other parts in the country. Maybe in some of the Texas suburban districts, I mean, they're obviously viewed very differently than you might see in the Northeast. But I will say one thing that I think is common amongst all of the districts is they're wanting common sense solutions. You hear this over and over. They want people to be work across the aisle, get things done. They want people to come together, stop the dysfunction that they see happening in Washington. So as these races play out, I think it'll be really interesting as the Democrats want to try to keep up their enthusiasm with their base. And most of them are pretty serious about wanting to impeach the president, and they also are resisting him in some sort of way. And then how does that translate, though, into coming to Washington and actually working across the aisle, getting things done?
Well, that does seem to be the central sort of friction point, which is if you're just watching the national news, all you see is chaos and controversy and people not getting along and dysfunction. So can you make a case that breaks through that says, oh, I can come to Washington and bridge that gap? Or is that even a believable argument, do you think?
You have to actually have evidence to show that that is something you've been doing. And luckily, Republican incumbents sitting in these toughest districts are able to have a story and a narrative to tell that shows how they've worked in a bipartisan manner, how they're trying to get things done. They can point to pieces of legislation. They can point to their bipartisan index score.
Well, and a lot of them do have a good story to tell. I mean, Will Hurd has the great, you know, road
this
trip across Texas.
Right.
And but I think back to back in the olden days, Amy, my favorite Republican, Chris Shays, who did survive that 2006 wave. He's just a very moderate Republican from Connecticut, but in 2008 just couldn't weather it anymore. And he had done everything as much as he could bipartisan, right? Very bipartisan, very moderate member. But I think ultimately the voters in that district just said, we're interested in Democrats right now. And look, Democrats faced the same problem in countless districts in 2010 where, you know, you had Democrats running on, I voted against Obamacare, I voted against all the environmental legislation. And ultimately voters said, yeah, we just want Republicans right now. And so I think the challenge for some of these Republicans who have tried to work across the aisle is voters may say, you might be trying, but your party's not. And your party's not holding this president accountable. And so we're going to have to put someone else in charge.
And that's been a trend, right? I mean, I remember talking to a Democratic pollster in 2010 who said, you know, you'd go in and you'd ask voters, what do you think about this Democratic incumbent? Oh, I like him. Are you going to vote for him? No.
Yeah.
You know, because I hate Obama. So I need to tell Obama why I don't like what he's doing. And it seems to me then that we, once again, the hollowing out of the center, if Democrats do take control of Congress, it will be because they defeated the very people who want to be more bipartisan.
Right. And they retired. And a lot of them retired.
A lot of them retired.
So if we think to 2019, regardless of who controls Congress, is the assumption that it's going to be even more polarized?
I think it's hard not to see that. I will say the light at the end of the tunnel, hopefully, is, you know, despite some of the press that some of the Democratic nominees are getting, you know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who defeated Joe Crowley, for example, I think most of the vast majority of Democrats winning their primaries are really winning on a, you know, I want to get stuff done agenda. And Nancy Pelosi, as much as she is demonized, you know, she will be the next Speaker of the House because she gets things done in her party and her caucus knows that. So I think that there is a desire with this new fresh blood of Democratic freshmen that are going to be coming in to get things done. And they are not going to be interested in just political posturing.
NYC Now delivers breaking news, top headlines, and in-depth coverage from WNYC and Gothamist every morning, midday, and evening. By sponsoring our programming, you'll reach a community of passionate listeners in an uncluttered audio experience. Visit sponsorship.wnyc.org to learn more.